From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Until this year, few African-American actors headlined blockbuster superhero, sci-fi, or fantasy movies. Then came Black Panther. That movie made more than $1 billion in its first month and is still racking up box office worldwide. A new sci-fi film aims to ride that new wave, Kin, starring Miles Truitt.
I can't believe this whole time you haven't told me this.
Go, go!
Get away from our brother.
That last voice there, 16-year-old Miles Truitt. Already he has an impressive number of roles into his resume. Now he's taking a shot as a lead, and the Atlanta native joins me now at GPB. Miles, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And welcome.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm well, but it was funny watching you listen to that little bit of tape. You knew every single bit.
Yeah.
Your head was jumping at just the right parts.
Seen it about six times. So,
what is the film about?
The film is about a young African-American boy that is originally an orphan, and he is with a predominantly white family. Brother's in jail for, like, most of his life and doesn't really have the connection with his father. And unfortunately, his mother is dead, so really doesn't have anybody to talk to. As a hobby, he scraps for metal for, you know, money, like a side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And while he does that, he comes across this huge futuristic weapon. Doesn't know where it's from. He doesn't like. And for some reason, he knows how to operate the weapon. And his brother comes back home from jail, gets in a little bit of trouble. There's also Zoe Kravitz that plays the role of Millie, and she plays like my sister. So they just go on this journey of self-exploration across the country, and there's these two extraterrestrial beings trying to get the weapon back, and we don't know what's going on. So it's really three stories in one. Really.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. It's kind of like the hero's journey. It's
right.
Kind of a family story, too.
It's mostly family. Most people think about this movie, and they see the trailer, and they're like, oh, it's action-packed, it's sci-fi. Yeah, it's sci-fi, but most of this movie, and it's wrapped around a family bond, really like a brother-like bond as well.
Well, a name like Kin, I guess it's going to be about family. But your character, Elijah, when he discovers his weapon, he's kind of like throws it over his shoulder. He feels really natural, you know, like he's born to this
exactly.
In some way.
Yeah.
So how about that character, Elijah, or Eli, as he's called in the film? How did you find that character?
Well, I feel like the character found me.
This film is based on a short film called Bagman,
right.
By two directors. I think they were in advertising. Josh and John Baker. Right?
Yeah. So they had sent me over the script, the whole script, and the short film. And before I even read the script, I watched the short film, and I saw Elijah's mannerisms and how he really didn't really talk. His acting was really in his eyes and how he went about himself, really. And I really just took that upon myself, and I saw different things in him that was in me, and it looked good on camera, so.
You've started acting when you're, what, 12, 11, 12 years old?
Professionally, I started acting when I was 14. Yeah, I want to say, like as soon as I turned 14, but I started, like, theatrical things when I was, like, 11 or 12.
What got you into it?
Yeah, it was really theater. I love theater. That was really like my starting point, just learning how to talk to people and enunciate my words and look somebody in the eye when I'm talking to them and smile and have different stage presence. And that really helped me to perform on screen and off screen as well.
And Maz, you worked with some pretty big names in Kin. You mentioned Zoe Kravitz, but Michael B. Jordan is the executive producer. James Franco is in it. Dennis Quaid. So what did you learn from those people looking up to them on the set?
I learned a lot of things. Really, Zoe just cared for different people. She was a very caring person on set.
She surprised you kind of nicely when you were on the set.
Yeah.
What happened?
So it was off screen, and they said cut, and we were just talking about like different artists and stuff like that and music, because I love music. And she was like, well, what type of music do you listen to? I was like, well, like hip-hop, rap. She was like, oh really, what's your favorite artist? I was like, I love Drake, like anything Drake I love. And she was like, oh really, cool, me not knowing that she's really cool with Drake. So like the last week of filming, she came up to me. She was like, hey, I have a fan that wants to meet you and wants to talk to you. Me thinking like, oh, it's probably like a fan from like New Edition Story or something. And I get her on the phone, beard and everything, Drake on the camera talking to me, and I was like crying and sobbing because like I wasn't really thinking that she would do it. So that was really cool, and she like and Drake's like sent me like loads of clothes to my hotel and everything, and told me that he's been looking at me and I'm doing a great job and stuff like that. So that was really, really cool that she did that.
It's a great role, you know, the fantasy of a kid who's like picking through trash piles and stuff to make a living, to suddenly have all of this army behind him on some level, all of this power. What's your superhero power?
My superhero power is love and charisma and joy. And I feel like I bring that to everyone that's around me. I feel like every person that I talk to smiles, and I love that. You know, so
I'm
you're
smiling,
smiling
now.
Right now. So I just, so I would never go a day without making a person smile. If it's my brother, if it's my dog, or my mom, or if it's just little kids that I see running around the parking lot playing ball or something, I feel like that's my job. I feel like that's why I was made to put in this world, not just to be an actor, not to have a job or anything like that, just to make people smile, make people laugh and enjoy their life.
Well, we look forward to watching where it goes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Atlanta native Miles Truitt. You can see his new film, Kin, in theaters now. He's also in Queen Sugar on OWN and Black Lightning on the CW network. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today, we add two new additions to our Georgia playlist. Here are the rules. We ask artists to pick two songs written or performed by another Georgian, and they can't pick their own. Brandon Bush is a member of the rock band Train, and he's a studio musician who's worked on songs by John Mayer and Sugarland. Here are Brandon's picks for our Essential Georgia playlist.
People walking around like the world's about to end.
My name is Brandon Bush. I'm a musician here in Atlanta, Georgia, currently out touring with Sugarland. And music on my Georgia playlist, it's a tough, tough decision here. But for me, it's Otis Redding, who is certainly one of my favorite artists of all time and certainly tied to Georgia here. And I'm going to go with Mr. Pitiful, although I could do almost anything from his catalog. But Mr. Pitiful is the great, to me, song about, it's Otis singing about Otis, and he does it so well. I was first introduced to Otis from a kid at a summer camp that I went to who knew I was into music, and he had this amazing CD box set of Otis Redding, and he let me borrow it, and I remember staying up all night at camp listening to this guy sing and think, I need to know what this is all about. And I've since then gone so deep in the world of the Stax catalog, and it's what introduced me to Booker T, who's become one of my musical heroes. I'll also pick new music, really, from Blackberry Smoke off their new record, Run Away From It All. And it, to me, is the epitome of kind of modern Southern rock being done both with truth and honesty, but a great nod towards our history here of Southern rock in Georgia.
I flipped a quarter in the river, then I headed for the other side.
Blackberry Smoke I've discovered really through being a fan of music here in Georgia and watching their rise and seeing them create this latest record that to me is them hitting full stride in their career. And when you love a band and they are continuing to grow, it kind of warms your heart because you know that they are at their peak of what they can do. And this song, Run Away From It All, is such a just a classic, great escapism summer hit. I've met them, but yeah, they haven't asked me out yet. Their keyboardist is named Brandon as well, so I think that slot's filled.
From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The best writing leaps across time and place to reveal what is universal and human. But like so many things that originate here, the Southern literary tradition is distinct. Today, we introduce the Southern Reading List. It's an occasional series of authors and readers sharing books that define and reflect the South. Jessica Handler is an Atlanta-based nonfiction writer and author of two memoirs about grief and loss. And here are her picks.
Hi, my name is Jessica Handler, and I am a nearly lifelong Atlantan and the author of three books, Invisible Sisters, a memoir, Braving the Fire, and the forthcoming The Magnetic Girl. Asking me about my favorite Southern books is very much like asking me who's my favorite Beatle. There are so many, not so many Beatles, but there are so many wonderful Southern books by Southern authors about Southern life, Southern issues. This is a tough call, so I've come up with some that matter a great deal to me. So here are some recommendations that I can start with. The first one is James Agee's novel, A Death in the Family. And A Death in the Family is kind of a proto-memoir. It's a thinly veiled story of what happened to him as a child. But what I love about this so much is that there's an essay that starts this book that he wrote, but then was installed in the book after his death, posthumously. And it's called Knoxville Summer, 1915. And I'd like to read a very short bit from Knoxville Summer. And the reason I love it, and here I am slipping in another book, is it reminds me of the same kind of language as Eudora Welty's short story June Recital. It captures summer evenings in the South. Supper was at 6 and was over by 6:30. There was still daylight shining softly and with a tarnish like the lining of a shell. And the carbon lamps lifted at the corners were on in the light, and the locusts were started, and the fireflies were out, and a few frogs were flopping in the dewy grass by the time the fathers and the children came out. Children ran out first, hell-bent and yelling those names by which they were known. Then the fathers sank out leisurely in crossed suspenders, their collars removed and the necks looking tall and shy. The mothers stayed back in the kitchen, washing and drying, putting things away, recrossing their traceless footsteps like the lifetime journeys of bees, measuring out the dry cocoa for breakfast. When they came out, they had taken off their aprons and their skirts were dampened, and they sat in rockers on their porches quietly. This is not the summer of our generation, but it brings us back to just a beautiful image. Another suggestion of mine is Pat Conroy's book, The Water is Wide. And Pat is known for his novels, but this is a memoir. And it's his memoir about being a young teacher on a barrier island off of South Carolina.
Those kids were fabulous to me. And, you know, I didn't know if I could teach or not. But they let me know I could. They let me know it.
Pat was my 11th grade writing teacher, and this book, which later was made into the film Conrack, which some people may know, was new when I was his student. And this book speaks to me maybe more than any of Pat's other books, because I have a great fondness for cultural history. I have a great fondness for nonfiction. And this first edition that I have is signed by Pat, and it says, "To Jessica, for the love of teaching writing, Pat Conroy." Some years ago at a book festival, and brought this to him and told him what I was doing now that I was grown up. And he signed it, and I treasure it. And it's a gorgeous book, and really worth looking into. Recently, I was asked by someone new to the Atlanta area, what books would I recommend to someone who wanted to learn about Atlanta's cultural and political history? And I immediately referred them to Gary Pomerantz's book, Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn. This is a cultural history of Atlanta told through the stories of two leading families, one black, one white, and each family produced a mayor, Ivan Allen and Maynard Jackson. The name of the book, of course, refers to the predominant business streets in white Atlanta and black Atlanta of a particular era, Peachtree and Sweet Auburn. The book is a great example of research and anecdote and cultural history, and is a really engrossing narrative. It's beautifully written, and I think it resonates if you grew up in Atlanta, as I did, or if you're new, as the person who asked me about it last week. I think we have to include Flannery O'Connor. How can we not? And for me, the go-to for Flannery O'Connor is a novel called Wise Blood. And, you know, there was a terrifically weird film that John Huston made with Brad Dourif that I think was shot in part in Grant Park.
Where you come from is gone. Where you thought you were going to weren't never there. And where you are ain't no good unless you can get away from it.
The novel itself, which is about faith and lies and identity and generally odd goings on, it is really very much worth reading. To me, it's a key Flannery O'Connor book.
That was author Jessica Handler. Her upcoming book, The Magnetic Girl, is out in early 2019. Accompanying music, Ophelia by Les Hayden. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Public schools and state offices across Georgia will close for Columbus Day on Monday, but one city south of Atlanta will observe another holiday, Indigenous Peoples Day, beginning this year. That prompted a voicemail from Carolyn Gimmick, who listens from Savannah.
I was calling with regard to Columbus Day. Yes, Columbus Day needs to be replaced with Indigenous Peoples Day, because you need to speak to the truth in history. You can't keep whitewashing history and rewriting it to suit a narrative. We need to actually say what really happened.
Thanks so much for that, Carolyn. South Fulton's Mayor Pro Tem Mark Baker spearheaded the change. I spoke with him earlier this week and asked why the city decided to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day.
It's not about an instead of, it's more to amplify the contributions and just acknowledge the fact that there were people here thousands of years before Columbus came. And I think that they should be honored, especially in the state of Georgia, given that the national capital for the Cherokee Indians were just in Gordon, I think about 3 miles away from Calhoun County. And I didn't know it was the first, but it's just something that should be done. And nobody had to force my hand to do something that's right.
Well, South Fulton is a new city, incorporated in 2016, 90% African American, and the first city in Georgia now celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day. So in a way, you're planting a flag here. What does this change communicate about the identity of South Fulton?
Well, it definitely identifies us as being progressive to be in this red state of Georgia. I just think that that's the point. The point is we are 90% black. I embrace that concept. I believe that we have an opportunity to govern for ourselves and make our own decisions. And hopefully it becomes infectious.
Well, wondering about infection and being infectious, do you want to draw people to South Fulton because it is a progressive place? Is that part of the goal?
Definitely. I believe that being in the metro Atlanta area, the fifth largest city in the state of Georgia, third largest in the metro Atlanta area, I think it's a refreshing place to be. We're about we're minutes away from the world's busiest airport. We have rail right next to us in Union City and Highway 85 and 285. I mean, it's the best place for business.
This is the mayor making his pitch.
Yeah. Come on. We need the business.
Well, Berkeley, California started the Indigenous Peoples Day in 1990, or first to celebrate, let's say. Some cities do celebrate both, and there has been a lot of opposition from Italian-American groups especially. This is a holiday that did symbolize pride for Italian-Americans who had been, let's say, experienced a lot of prejudice in the late 19th century especially. So what do you say to them?
I say nothing to them. I hate to say it like that, but I do say nothing to them. There are approximately 22 million acres stolen from people, you know, who walked the Trail of Tears with smallpox, you know, in blankets. And they left from Georgia, went all the way to Oklahoma at gunpoint. I mean, by the guy that we spend on a $20 bill every day. So it's not about demonizing Columbus Day. It's not about ostracizing Italians, but it's more like just embracing the chaos that took place and acknowledging it. You know, a lot of those people, you know, at times are nameless and faceless. And if we amplify it, I think we have an opportunity to get the record straight and get history corrected. I mean, 1492, you know, we teach our kids that Columbus discovered America, but the reality of it is he got here and there was a whole lot of people here, you know, and that's miseducation, and we can't afford to have miseducation, especially in South Fulton. Carter G. Woodson said in The Miseducation of the Negro that there's two types of knowledges, one that is given to you and the other that you acquire on your own, and of the two, the latter is the greater, and that's what we want to amplify in South Fulton.
Well, it's one thing to vote on a change. How will the city celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day?
Well, we're a new city, so we had to bring over police, fire, public works, parks and rec, code enforcement. So we're just actually getting our bearings. So this year, we probably can't do as much as we would like, but there will be some celebratory festivities. We're going to get young people involved and try to, you know, just amplify the best way we can with short notice, because it did just happen. We did just pass a budget. We don't have a lot of money yet to, you know, throw at things like this at this time. But, you know, we're looking forward to years and years of celebration.
I did notice on my Apple calendar, you know, on my iPhone, that it says Indigenous Peoples Day and Columbus Day on October the 9th.
That's good.
Well, and so communicating the name change is, you know, I think a lot of people are going to catch themselves and say, oh, it's No, it's Indigenous Peoples Day. Is that what you're hoping for?
I'm hoping for that. I definitely am. And I think that the more that happens, the more infectious it is. I know Atlanta has been lobbied for several years, you know, to make this change. But of course, you know, Atlanta's demographic is a little bit different from the city of South Fulton. But, you know, I just think that what's right is right. I've been told by a lot of people who do what I do that I'm turning over chairs and I'm messing up stuff and I need to be careful. But I think that they should have done it some time ago, you know, to the point where it's when you're doing something right and then you realize that this is the first time that somebody has done it, it's a real eye-opener to just progressive thought in general.
Yeah, I wonder if others are going to follow. Do you expect that?
I do.
Mark Baker, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
South Fulton Mayor Pro Tem Mark Baker, who drafted the resolution that ultimately changed Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day in the city of South Fulton. And we'd love to hear from you. Do you think it's time to do away with Columbus Day? Do you think it should be supported and celebrated still? Call and leave us a message at 404-500-9457, or you can post a comment on Facebook or Twitter at OST Talk.